Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives. From the New European. Salvador Dali, 11th of May 1904 to the 23rd of January 1989. On the evening of Wednesday, the 1st of July 1936, Salvador Dali prepared to address a crowd gathered at the New Burlington Galleries in London's Mayfair. The three-week International Surrealist Exhibition was in its final days and had already caused quite a stir. For its opening, the British artist Sheila Legg had posed in Trafalgar Square as the Surrealist Phantom, wearing a wedding dress with her head completely swathed in flowers. A Danish artist's work had already been turned back at the British border and came close to being destroyed altogether after being deemed pornographic. At one point, the poet Dylan Thomas was circulating among visitors with a cup containing boiled string, asking if they liked it weak or strong. The composer William Walton pinned a kipper to a painting by Juan Miro. Paul Nash removed it when the smell became overpowering. Dali, never knowingly upstaged, clearly needed to come up with something exceptional for his lecture, if he was going to be the one talked about after the event. Taking as his topic some authentic paranoiac phantoms, the artist clanked up to the lectern in a full deep-sea diving suit, carrying a billiard cue, accompanied by a pair of Irish wolfhounds. It would have been tricky enough for the London audience to make out what Dali was saying from inside the bolted-down brass helmet, but the fact he was speaking in French, with a strong Spanish accent, made it all but impossible. The chair of the event put his ear to the helmet and attempted to translate. There was a story about how, as a child, Dali had been fascinated by a dead donkey, and an anecdote about a student friend who had, with Dali's approval, once eaten a wardrobe. Just after he announced through the twin filters of helmet and interpreter that human beings are excessively small blackheads on the nose of space, it became clear, even in this unusual scenario, that something was amiss. Dali's voice faltered. His breathing became laboured. Increasingly frantic gestures were initially interpreted as part of the show, but the artist was, in fact, slowly asphyxiating. David Gascoigne, poet and author of the previous year's A Short Survey of Surrealism, rushed over with a spanner, undid the bolts sealing the helmet and, with a bit of help from the billiard cue, prized off the headgear to reveal a dazed and pale Dali, moustache still immaculately symmetrical. It was as if performance suffocation was all part of the plan. He had sailed perilously close to tragedy, but soon realised the significance of the incident, writing later that, "I believe the Darwinian mythology owed a great deal to the violent eccentricity of this lecture in a diving suit." Dali was a supreme artist of the 20th century, not just in terms of the surrealist works he produced, from melting clocks to telephones with lobsters for receivers, but in his pioneering role harnessing the power of personal celebrity. Most artists' names conjure in the mind images of their work. Mention the name Salvador Dali, and even now, more than 20 years after his death, most people will likely see the wide-eyed stare and gravity-defying moustache. When his body was exhumed in 2017 as part of an unsuccessful paternity suit, his facial hair was still immaculately in place. Where his contemporaries were happiest in their studios and in the galleries, Dali recognised the value of modern mass entertainment culture to an artist capable of making it work to his advantage. His combination of flamboyance, intelligence, wit and talent ensured that he became the most recognisable artist of the age, unafraid and unashamed to court publicity for himself as much as his work. He was an early adopter of cinema as a method of artistic expression. Collaborating with Luis Buñuel on the groundbreaking Un Chien Andalou, released in 1929. Still regarded as a masterpiece, the film became notorious for a scene Dali contributed, in which an eyeball is sliced with a razor, one of the most daring and controversial moments in the history of film. Alfred Hitchcock invited Dali to create the memorable dream sequence in his 1945 thriller Spellbound, citing the architectural sharpness of his work. Shortly afterwards, Dali was commissioned by Walt Disney to work on Destino, an animation that was a long way into production when financial problems brought the project to a premature close. When television became ubiquitous in the United States during the 1950s, it brought new and different opportunities. In 1957, Dali appeared as a guest on What's My Line, signing in with a paintbrush ahead of an appearance memorable for how he answered almost every question in the affirmative, including, "Are you known for being a writer?" and "Do you have anything to do with sports or any form of athletic endeavour?" He designed four covers for Vogue magazine, an LP cover for Jackie Gleason, created a portrait of Raquel Welch to promote her film Fantastic Voyage, and produced advertisements for De Beers, Gap and Datsun, among others. In 1969, he designed a new logo for Chupa Chups, a version of which is still used on the lollipop's packaging today. This naked commercialism predictably drew criticism from his contemporaries. André Breton, credited as the key figure in the establishment of surrealism, had said back in 1929 that, "With the coming of Dali, it is perhaps the first time that the mental windows have been opened really wide, so that one can feel oneself gliding up towards the sky's wild trap." Breton eventually took to referring to Dali as Avida Dollars, an anagram of his name that means greedy for dollars in Spanish. If it was designed to hurt, it didn't work. Dali had never hidden his ambition, nor his belief in his own talent and destiny. In his autobiography, he wrote, "At 7, I wanted to be Napoleon. My ambition has been growing steadily ever since." He delighted in Breton's anagrammatic barb and embraced it himself. Yet for all his showboating, Dali was unquestionably a supremely gifted artist. Self-publicity can only carry you so far if you have no substance with which to back it up. A native of Catalonia, Dali began his career in outwardly conventional fashion, enrolling at Madrid's School of Fine Art in 1921. It didn't last. There were hints of what was to come. He was suspended once for seditious behaviour and arrested twice for anti-government activities, before being expelled altogether for refusing to sit an examination in the history of art. "I am infinitely more intelligent than these three professors, and I therefore refuse to be examined by them," he announced. The key moment in his creative destiny occurred in 1928, when he visited Paris for the first time and met Pablo Picasso, Marcel Duchamp, Breton and others. He abandoned the cubism with which he'd been wrestling in favour of surrealism. Within 3 years, Dali had produced The Persistence of Memory, the oil painting of flaccid, melting clocks that became his most famous work. It was a product of what he called his paranoiac critical method, through which he tried to access the creative depths of his subconscious, free of influence or conditioning. He described it as a spontaneous method of irrational knowledge, based on the critical interpretative association of the phenomena of delirium. He would stare at a fixed object for so long it would start to transform in front of his eyes, while sitting with a mixing bowl in his lap, holding a spoon. If he nodded off, the spoon would clatter into the bowl and wake him up, keeping him, he thought, in a dreamlike state that could access the images he sought. A master of a particular strand of irrational knowledge in both his work and his personality, Dali the man became as famous as his art. Pronouncements, such as his long-running insistence that Perpignan railway station was the centre of the earth, and if Spain were not anchored to it, we would now be in Australia with the kangaroos, and there is nothing more depressing in the world than living with kangaroos, would anger artistic purists, not to mention Australians. But the quality of his work endures as powerfully as the self-belief of the man himself. "Compared to Velázquez, I am nothing," he said in 1960. "Compared to contemporary painters, I am the biggest genius of modern times." Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.